Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. We'll bring you tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Hey, everybody, John Rankin here, coming to you from Sales Platoon, and I'm really excited to get this series started off with a tribute to our founder, Raleigh Wilkins. And today on our show, we have his silent partner and good friend who actually kept Sales Platoon alive, Jim LaFell. And we're just going to talk briefly about how you came to know Raleigh, why you got involved, because you're not a veteran, right? You're okay. But you've had a long history of being a successful business person and salesperson, and really just talk about what it was that you saw in Sales Platoon that caused you to really get involved in this, and then when he passed, to keep it alive. So why don't you tell me about how you and Raleigh actually first met, and a little bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. Well, first, John, thank you very much, and it's great to see you as always and to chat with you. You know, this subject's interesting because our introduction was rather interesting, and the reason is that on my last day of my last job, in other words, I was retiring, my assistant called me right at the very at 5 p.m. I would say at my last day on a Friday, and she said, "By the way, you need to speak to this gentleman, Raleigh Wilkins. He's your kind of guy." And what she meant by that is that I appreciate people who are passionate, people who are fierce, and at the same time know exactly what they want, and they've got and their entire goal is really to help others. That doesn't mean there wasn't a profit motivation to this, but at the end of the day, he really wanted to really share his knowledge and his success. Actually, he had tremendous success himself in sales with people. So, you know, I made the phone call. I called him up and realized on the phone that this was somebody that was very unique, very special, and fiercely passionate about his mission and himself and what he was doing. It didn't take me but probably a week. I bought a ticket to Chicago. I didn't live in Chicago at the time, and flew up and met with him. And realized he had his business plan was one aspect of it. And frankly, the business plan, I'll say it out loud. I've been a business coach, a CEO coach. I have had the opportunity to walk into businesses and pick off flaws. And when I say a flaw, it's not a flaw in the CEO. It's not necessarily a flaw. It's one of those pieces of the puzzle in our life that we just missed. And he didn't really have his business plan perfected. But you know what? When you're starting out, anybody, and like yourself, John, you're a bootstrapper. You've brought a lot of other companies up yourself. And so, you know, it's easy to make, and it's nice to have another set of eyes and ears to take a look at some things.
For sure.
So I sat down with him, but what swept me off my feet, if you will, it's kind of a corny way to put it, but was his unbelievable presentation style. I mean, this guy, I think it was like probably 20 degrees in Chicago. Is a January or February day, and he shows up in a vest, and he's really dressed to the hilt, you know, but he's got this posture.
He had swagger.
Yeah. What's that?
He had swagger.
Yeah, he did. Exactly. He had swagger. He walks in and it was just that And he was a Marine. My father was a Marine. My father-in-law was a Marine. And so, you know, it's a very identifiable for those of us who have been around the Marines, if you will. And so, in fact, my father was a drill instructor. Wow. Marine, so I also just run. I knew it quite well. But anyway, but that wasn't the end of it. I mean, you combine that with his magical ability to convert a business vision with a mission of helping others and being able to connect. And it was a big mission for me to understand the mission of saying, hey, look, Jim, I've got bodies. I want to train them. I want to make money on training them, but not from them because they can't pay. Right. I want to be able to present these well-trained people to people who are looking for highly trained, ready to go, boots on the ground, B2B salespeople. There's not a lot of career opportunities for someone who wakes up. And I did a lot of recruiting in my life. So my last job is recruiting, and people, I would get people on the phone, young people right out of college. They said, Jim, I went to college in biochemistry or whatever because my parents wanted me to be a doctor. I could care less about being a doctor. I just actually loved to, my part-time job was selling cell phones or whatever. And they were number one salesperson. I loved it. You know, so these people, but they don't have a career path. I mean, they went to college. They spent thousands of dollars going to college, and there's no really a school of that nature. And there are schools for sure. And he was replicating that, but his was more unique than that. He said, Jim, I also want to help people who are transitioning. And he had to really educate me real quickly on what it meant to go into the service from somebody who's right out of high school or maybe, you know, in their early 20s or whatever that number is, and then spend, you know, 10, maybe 15 years or so. And now they're out, and quite many of them were married, had children. And now that stream of income, if you will, and that incredibly inclusive safety net is going to dissolve away. And when he shared to me those experiences and how that is and what a blunt force that can feel like, I realized that this was a bigger piece than just teaching people how to sell. Teaching people.
Now, what year was this?
So this is back in, this is 2021. So it'd be June. I met him on June 7th, 2021. That's the day that I retired. So right away, we got together. We got together because, like I said, I read into him fierce, passionate, helping others, and he had a tremendous sense of humor. He had and he had a tremendous level of engagement. So in other words, I don't care. We could walk down the streets of Chicago. He could talk to anybody and everybody, and he could hold a conversation with three people at one time. This type of enigmatic personality that people would engage him. And he created this element of trust really fast. That's why he was a great salesperson, is because when he looked you in the eye and he spoke and his posturing, and he was humble, but he was also assertive at the same time. He had credibility, but at the same time was extremely warm and comfortable about talking a broad range of topics. And people really came to him. So, you know, as we worked through this, he brought that to the table, not only for the people that invested in his company like myself, he also brought that to the table for each and every member that came to his classes. And the biggest piece was he did go out and cultivate companies, big companies, if you and I have talked about many of them, the Verizons of the world that he worked with, and Adobe, and a few of these other sizable tech and non-tech companies that he worked with and provided first-class salespeople to. You know, so that's, you know, the Raleigh that I know was somebody who inspired those of us to participate in terms, whether it was an investment in the company or for me, it was not only that, it was help. I was involved with Raleigh every single day. I was involved in the classes. I even did a little bit of the teaching, but I actually joined the classes mainly to watch him and get a sense of how he was able to train these people, like I said, not only from a mechanical standpoint, but also from a standpoint of, look, this is where you're going. He was blunt about it. I mean, he had this thing called the murder board, which basically is a terrible word, but it was where he'd make, at the end of the course, he'd have them make their presentations. And if they did it while he was in, they were doing their presentation, he'd behave like probably some of the most rude people that you would be selling to. And he was brutal about it. I mean, but, you know, people knew, and they allowed him to do that. They trusted him. That was the thing. They really trusted him, even though it was sometimes pretty harsh. And, but it was reality. I mean, and that was what he wanted to share with them. He was never apologetic. I can tell you that right now, never. And he wouldn't be. I mean, certainly he would apologize if he made a gross error or hurt somebody.
Sure.
But I mean, but he didn't ever apologize for his message and or the way he delivered it. He never did, because he felt like, look, if this is the truth, if he can't handle it, then you need to watch the movie, whatever it is. But, you know, it's he came from a background that I think actually a lot of people, and probably a pretty strong handful of people that are in the military, come from a background that they would like to change. And he was no exception. He was a foster child.
Mm-hmm.
He was an alcoholic when he was quite young. I think he had been dry for something like 20 or 25 years, maybe.
He mentioned that when he came to Fort Campbell, that because we went out to O'Charley's, and when he came down, it was still during Lent. And so he wasn't eating meat. He was doing fish. And he was telling me a little bit about overcoming that and being sober. And so that, you know, I know that that's a part of his story.
Yeah. Well, I think when anybody becomes an alcoholic at a young age, it's a battle for life. And maybe battle is not the right word, but it's something that you have to have care around. You have to care for yourself to the point that you have to verbalize it. And maybe not have to is the right word, but you do. It's almost natural that you need to describe. And there's a great deal of pride, I think, with him in being able to do that. He embraced Christianity. He was a devout Catholic. And I know that that would also help guide him to success on those demons also. So, but you know, that all gave him this tremendous strength. You know, people who have to battle those demons, and it's a never ending battle, that also brings that core strength out that a lot of people, and I've said to people, well, I think we've all observed it, John. We know people who've lived a cushy life from childhood all the way up, and they got into Harvard because their parents were were an alum, you know what I mean? And they get in and they come, but they don't ever achieve the passion of success. The people who have had their feet to the fire at some point in time.
Yeah.
And he had, and the foster care wasn't good for him. It was not supportive, but he got out. You know, he turned 17 or 18, somewhere along in there. He put time in, he went right into the military. And frankly, he even admitted to me, he said, I'm surprised they kept me. He said, I'm surprised I was able to get in and get going, you know, and then he put his time in there. And then that regimen, if you will, really, I think, helped him a lot. It carved a piece out of him that says, now I know who I am.
Now he did,
go ahead.
Remind me, he did, what was it, two tours in Iraq, one in Afghanistan? Or was it vice versa? Was it two in Afghanistan and one in Iraq with the Corps?
You know, I can't, you know what? I don't remember that, to be honest with you. I'd have to follow up, but what he did put in the time, I know that he was a correspondent. He wasn't necessarily, well, I mean, he was around live fire, but I don't think he actually was in battles himself, but he was there. And I know that he did participate at a pretty dramatic level, but I don't remember. I have to say, I can't remember those details. I focused a lot on, you know, when he got out and he worked for NASDAQ. He actually did some selling for them, and he did some selling for other companies. He worked for Elsevier's. Elsevier's is a company most people may not have heard of. I happen to know about them because they're a medical publishing company that publishes medical journals, and they're a huge publishing company. And he was successful. Both of them became VP of sales, I think, over at NASDAQ. And so he when he came out of the military, obviously gave him the strength to go find those positions. He already had the intuitive ability to sell, I believe,
right,
like a lot of us who are in sales. But the Marines gave him that, you know, for lack of a better word, that spine, but actually really uncovered his ability to get out and be assertive and to show off his true talent. You know, we have our talents, and then we have our, you know, what we're good at. And, you know, he had talents, but he didn't know he was really good at selling. You know, he had his talent, but he didn't know he was good. The Marines gave him that ability to say, you know, you are good at this. not that the Marines teach you to sell, but they teach you about yourself. And I think that's really, really what it did for him. It created a man for out of him for sure. And so, and you know, his life was, you know, certainly complicated and fraught with some difficult areas. But when I met him, it was he was a breath of fresh air. And he and I were talked pretty frank about those low times once in a while, and he would call me, which was great that he found enough honesty in me and enough safety in me to spend time, you know, at 8 or 9 o'clock at night with a phone call. Not a lot, but once in a while. And so it was good. So
yeah. So you came on board. So when I think about this, so the paperwork I got, he started Sales Platoon in 2018 or 2019.
Right.
And then obviously 2020, we know what happens there. You come on board in early or mid 2021.
Right.
Okay. And then in 2022 is when Fort Campbell asked me to start a skill bridge. And I was like, no way, I'll go find somebody. And then I found Sales Platoon online, and he flew down to Fort Campbell, and we spent time together here. It's just really kind of interesting the way that whole thing kind of transpires, right? How did he get connected with your company for them to tell you on the day you're walking out the door to call him?
Yeah, so I had the most, you know, when I retired at 69 years old, and I had a lot of assistants I've worked with, but I had
great for 69, by the way.
Yeah, well, thanks. It's a lot of work. No, I'm kidding. I had an assistant, and she was brilliant. She was brilliant, and she was really tuned in to me and what I was looking for. So she did the pre-screening of everybody that called in, whether it was somebody like Raleigh that wanted to, you know, sell us individuals, or whether it was individual. But she pre-screened all my candidates before I actually did an interview with them. She was just an incredibly perceptive woman. She's gone on to recruiting herself, and she actually recruits for pilots for United Airlines at one of the airlines. They got to poach each other. They got to poach each other to keep there. There's not enough pilots, you know. So, and she may be doing something now, but she's the one that when she talked to him for a little while, it just clicked in her head. She said, you know, we might be able to put some of your people to work here on one hand, but on the other hand, you should talk to Jim, because I know Jim did retire, but I also know Jim well enough. While he enjoys fishing, he's not going to do it every day. And he's not one to just go and say, I'm retired and I'm going to go work in my garden. It's not me. So that's why she did it. And she called me at home. I mean, and just said, Jim, you know, give this gentleman a call. This is an interesting contact for you. And she'd have had contacts even since then, but that's how that transpired. I appreciate her for it. Really, I really do.
Yeah, no, that's a good assistant, right? So
yeah.
Cool. So talk to me a little bit about as Sales Platoon was getting into late 2021-22, that's really kind of when some of the issues started coming up, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, but what was happening that Raleigh was struggling in that area?
Well, so as we move forward and I learn more and more about what the core program, which is the core program, is the one you're executing now, basically. So let's find veterans and ones that that can sell or want to take a career in sales. Let's train them, transition them, and then let's find them jobs, whatever that takes. And that was his original core group. So, but Raleigh had a much bigger picture than that. And that's really what inspired me from a financial standpoint to get involved. I had no idea where my personal level with Raleigh was going to get on this, to be honest with you, which transpires the financial side of this. At the end of the day, the financial side was like, okay, this is something I can support, whether I get paid back now or 20 years from now. I didn't really care, but I should say I didn't care. Of course, I always care, but I should say it didn't become the primary focus, probably the best thing. But so what happened is we had created a what we would call a PEO, which is basically a professional employment organization or a professional sales organization that we were just beginning to test out, that we would take a group of veterans that worked for us in Chicago under our own umbrella, and we had a line of computers and little small offices there in the Willis Tower, which is the ex-Sears building. And we had companies that say, hey, we used to introduce or sell our product for us. And we would just sell them the sales force. Well, when we looked and ran the numbers on that, financially, it made more sense. So it was an adjunct and probably was going to become a bigger piece and maybe the sales platoon in itself. But it would also open up this tremendous pipeline for us to say, look, if you want to go to work for these companies, we'll take you, we'll get you set up and introduce you to those companies. On the other hand, if you want to stay and do the work for sales platoon, here's the pay that we'll pay you. And here's what that looks like and feels like. And here's the companies that hire us on occasion, or who knows what's going to be. And you're going to be doing a lot of outbound calling, looking for companies, looking for a sales force, which is a lot easier than outbound calling, looking for, I want to sell you something. When you call a company and say, you know what, I've got a built-in, well-trained, ready-to-go sales force. If you got a new product you want to introduce, do you know who your clients are? We'll find them. We'll go from there. And he had built in a lot of technology. And you and I have talked a lot about that leftover technology that's out there. He had a tremendous, Zoom Info, the other databases of all the companies. He had all that pulled together. And so that was really where, and my portion was funding that piece. And at the same time, going out and finding other funders. Well, Raleigh had some fragility to him for sure. And he actually spent a week in the hospital at the VA in Chicago. I went up to see him. I picked him up probably, I think his best friend who lives there picked him up from the hospital. I went and saw him a couple of days later. And, you know, he was, I won't say fine, but he was stressed, but he was, you know, but he could do the job. I mean, he came right back to work and he started to do the job. I have to laugh because he did say, Jim, you know, I live down the street from where I work and I can't see driving my car this 10 blocks in the snow. So he got himself a bicycle. Well, you know, the first day I told him, I said, Raleigh, and I said this and I meant this. I said, well, I'm going to buy some insurance on you because for you, where you drive down Michigan Avenue to get to your office, it's not someplace you want to ride a bike, especially in the middle of the winter. I said, yeah. This is, you know, sure enough, he gets hit. Now he's not hurt. Nothing happens. He's wearing a helmet. He's a real safety guy. So he calls me up and he shows me a rip in his pants or whatever. I said, what did I tell you? I said, yes. So he stopped doing that. But that's the kind of stuff he did. I mean, he did some,
because he was real eclectic, right? So he was playing guitar and was doing some stand-up comedy, right?
He did stand-up comedy. He played the guitar. He sang. Yeah. He had a fiance that was on and off, but just a delightful human being I got to meet in this process. And she would tell me the stories and how he would court her and how he would these elaborate schemes of show of his affection for her were just, you know, it was overblown and parties he put on for her stuff. It was
Modern day Great Gatsby.
Yeah. Yeah. In a lot of ways. Yeah. And he did that for everything. I mean, people said that he'd show up, you know, I can't remember. He saw some people running. He lived right off of Lake Michigan. So he, in the summer, these guys, a group of guys would run. And he said, hey, I want to run with you guys. They said, sure, we'll meet us here tomorrow, whatever. He shows up, they said, in the most wildest outfit that they were like, oh, my God, we don't want to be seen with this guy. You know? But he said, well, is this not the right gear? You know, it was just how. But once they got to know him, they realized, hey, you know what? It's just quirky. It's just Raleigh. And he was very, very flamboyant. And you know, he always wore a vest. He had a sport coat and a vest.
Always was in a vest.
Yeah, he was always wearing a vest. And some of those vests got really wild. And he was, so that's what made a lot of this a lot of fun. I mean, I had a lot of fun when I went to Chicago and we finally got out of the office and we went to dinner and we went around and the people he knew and talked to and his flamboyancy is probably as a good word. It was just a blast. And you know, there was no alcohol required. I can tell you that it was just a raw blast being with him. So that was him without a doubt. Yeah. But, you know, to go back to your question, you know, so the issues became this conflict of building out this entity. And it's hard to attract people to come into downtown Chicago if they don't live there. I mean, if they live there, you can find them. But not if a veteran is not located there, right. That's not necessarily.
Yeah, there's nothing really up there except for the Navy post. on the Great Lakes.
Exactly. So we were actually considering moving to Virginia, and there were some incentives to do so, the state, and I think the federal government too, but for us to move out that way. The state of Illinois had some great support and veteran support programs, and he was already integrated in those. And so those programs would have been hard to leave, although we would have recreated them most likely in Virginia. In fact, I know Virginia had has outstanding veteran support programs too. But that was a conflict. That was a hard. So we weren't getting that core built out, and that was causing him some stress. And then the companies that were taking on our people, it felt like it became, how do I word this? Maybe somewhat selfish on their part. You know, their expectations began to change. And, you know, there were some economic things happening. I mean, COVID.
Right.
Yes, we are coming out of COVID. But when you think about early 21, it's still very on. It's still.
Yeah, the country's still locked down. I mean, there's stuff still happening.
Yeah. So there's a lot of damage that's been done in the economy and in the psyche of hiring people. That's really what it came down to. The psyche of hiring was, where are we going? Where is the economy? Even today, I mean, that legacy still exists today, as we know. Yeah. And so, you know, good salespeople are always in demand. There's no true slump. I mean, I've come through recessions. I was no chance of ever being laid off. Did I make less money because the sales were lower? Sure, because it's a commission job. That's just the way it works. But
that's one thing I love about you. You come out of a commission background like I do. So.
Yeah, you know, and you learn, you know, I learned a lot. I mean, my parents came through the Depression. Like I said, my dad was in World War II. So we learned as children that, you know, you save every penny, no matter how much you got, you still save every penny. So, I mean, you just know how to. You know how to get through those times. And you know what you also, I learned as a perspective, and Raleigh had this perspective, is those times don't last. You know, tough people last. Tough times don't last. And so that's really, I think, a lot of, you know, so that's a part of a Marine too, right there. You know, this battle's tough, but it's not going to last. But the toughest of the tough will come through. And so, you know, and that's what we were working through. Financial is getting a little stretched. At the same time, our support from our core group of hiring people is becoming a little pressure. So that's the pressure that started to befall him. And he took it harder than I think he should. But as I've already talked about him, I think we realized he was emotional. He was dramatic. And he was also, and so that all contributes to this thing that plays in your head. You know, so you combine that with what demons that he had, you know,
it's so funny too, because you meet somebody so magnetic like him. Like I, you know, when he came to Fort Campbell, man, it was like the world was on fire and he had the hose. Like he just, you know, we were sitting in here at Fort Campbell, which is right behind me, but we were sitting in the place where they do like all these veteran hiring fairs. And I just remember him, I won't mention who he was upset with, but I just remember him going to town fighting for these kids. And he was so upset. And I remember watching him going, and I asked him, I was like, hey, what was that about? And he explained it to me. And I was like, well, that makes sense. Like, I'd be pissed about that too. And I, you know, like I said, I didn't get much time with him actually to really develop a long relationship. He was powerful when he was on, and he was just as energetic when he was mad. So, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah. And you know, I saw that once in a while. I mean, not between he and I, but I saw him, you know, because, John, in his mind, if you claim to be helping vets get a job or become trained or to transition or to whatever it is, and all of a sudden, the things you're doing and the way you posture are inconsistent with that mission, he questions it.
Yeah.
Well, why are you here? Is there some self-aggrandizement around this for you to say, oh, I help vets? Or is there a financial incentive here that you're pocketing money just because they're vets? I mean, you know, he sniffs that out. He goes on the attack because he says you're not being true to your mission or to the vets. And you're not being true to me. I mean, and he would tell him outright. And he didn't do it in a perfect way. I mean, we can all display our frustration or anger, sure, or cover falsehoods without becoming angry about it. But hey, you know what? He was passionate, and that was a piece of that.
You know, his vision, which is what bought me in, like you. Like when I saw the website, I was like, because I love sales. I've been in sales since I was 11, long time commission only guy. I mean, outside of the Army, I've really done sales my entire career, my entire life.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had a couple of non-sales roles, but I've had 4 W-2s my whole life. So it struck me when I was going through the website, and then I met him, because he was an anti-commission guy. Like, he wanted just BDR roles. And so when I first met him, the goal was to start getting these kids hired for more than $20-25 an hour, which is still happening. And then I saw an opportunity there that I could help him a little bit and take the companies that were calling him for commission only stuff, and I could work with them because that's my background. Right. I just remember us having that conversation. He's like, yeah, you can teach all that shit. Like, he just didn't want nothing to do with it. And it was so funny too, because he was, you know, like, he never met me. I had one conversation with you and him. And then he's on a plane to Fort Campbell.
Yeah.
You know, and I picked him up from Nashville, and, you know, like, he literally, if it was about helping the troops, he was gone.
He was there. Yeah.
And I don't know from your perspective, because again, I just met you on that one Zoom call. Did he even do any vetting before flying down here, or did he just get in the plane and come?
I think, John, that in the amount of time, actually, you're right. The three of us were on that Zoom call, right?
Yeah.
And when you departed from that Zoom call, he'd have me on almost all his Zoom calls of that nature. And the only reason, well, I won't say the only, but the biggest reason why I was there, when you depart, he'd say, okay, Jim, is this somebody, do you trust this guy? What do you think? Yeah. And yeah, this is a veteran. This guy is not, I've looked him up here online while we're talking, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, this guy's authentic. You should go down and talk to him. It sounds like it'd be a great lead into Fort Campbell. And maybe more than that, because Israel and I were talking, is at some point in time, a CEO like Raleigh, or even yourself, is that you can work in the business for a long time, but you have to, some point in time, I mean, you're a bootstrapper yourself on a few of these things. So when you look at that bootstrapping, the company is going to mature, and you have to mature with it, which means now you got to work on the company, not in the company.
That's right.
And that was my biggest challenge with him, is that we need to find someone that's either going to run the company, or Raleigh, you're going to run the company and they're going to sell, which means you need to find, train. So we need to find teachers. We did find a teacher.
And I'm having the same struggle he has. So the value for he and I comes from connecting with these kids and showing them a better way.
Yeah.
I'm already there.
Yeah, that's your heart, John. That's what you don't want to ever leave that. And
he wouldn't have either.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. And I said, okay, well, let's find a CEO. And I said, well, maybe somebody like John Rentkin would fit that role. You know,
I'm just as bad as him.
Well, if that has me just as worried. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. But
I think that in time, though, maybe there's a compromise in there. And I tried to get him to do this. We hired Christine, and Christine was a fabulous teacher, a fabulous person. And she got addicted. She said, oh my God, Jim, this is such a great, I mean, because in the beginning, she was like, okay, well, I'm going to do this teaching. I'm going to do it this way, blah, 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 blah. And it was about a week later, she calls me. She says, Jim, this is different. I said, yes, it is different. This is a group of people that came from somewhere. They didn't come out of college or high school and they're green and this is a whole different ball game. And she was like, wow, these people are like me. They have children, they have, you know, broken families, and or they have whole families, or they have this. She just thought that it was, so we all got that way. It was a hard thing, and I understand it. I get it. It was hard for me to, when I took the whole class for the whole 3 months. Now those young men and women went on to their into their careers after that. But I didn't go to the second class, but I did miss it for the same reason, is that it's a lot of fun to watch and interact with these people and to grow with them. I learned a lot from them. I learned a huge amount about their life. I knew nothing about the military or the nuances of being in the military. I had no clue.
Or the transition.
Right, exactly. You know, and Parris Island is, you know, one direction, 3 or 4 miles, and the other direction is the Marine Air Corps base. So I definitely have a lot of exposure to it. And I have to admit, John, I forgot to tell you this. I spent probably 3 hours over it. There's a museum on the on Parris Island. It's one of the best historical museums about South Carolina I have ever been to. It covers not just the military, but it covers all the aspects of the military and the Marines. But it certainly has this. It's just a great. So if you ever come this way, you need to come out this way. I'll take you over there. But
okay.
It got off track there a little bit. But Raleigh kind of got off. I kind of forgot where we were headed. I got off track.
That's all right. That's why you do these things, man, because that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, we talked about being really heartfelt into helping these individuals. And that's the toughest thing, as you mentioned, for yourself as well as Raleigh. So how, you know, maybe that's a conversation right there. Maybe it is a podcast. Maybe we invite somebody to give us some help. How do we help transition you or how, if you want to teach, how do we get someone that functions the company? You know, Southwestern, where are they at in the conversation?
The truth is, and I had to do this cohort because it's getting too busy, is I had to bring in a second teacher to take part of the load. And then I'm looking at by April that 2 out of every month, I'm not teaching on that Monday. I'm working with the companies. That allows me to still connect with the kids and build a relationship with the kids and to do what I love to do. It is also slowly freeing me up to actually run the company part of this. And, you know, the way I structured it, which was slightly different than the way Raleigh structured it, I spend less time on the tools, more time on the practicum of selling, right? And then make them go sell. But I also took us off Zoom so much so that and did some more self-paced certification stuff that they could really, you know, they could really sink their teeth into that would help their career over the course of the next 5, 10, 20 years or whatever, right? And even that was hard, like to release that. And I think ultimately when you have, you know, I joked with you when we first started really connecting and talking and you helping me put this thing back together after his death, was I would joke, it's not my ugly baby, so I don't really care. But I found that as the year went on, it became my ugly baby, you know?
And it isn't so ugly either.
Yeah, right? You know, well, I mean, the inner joke between you and I was everybody thinks their kid's the best looking kid in the world. And so, and Raleigh thought this about Sales Platoon. And, you know, when I came in, I didn't have any of that prejudice because I was not really involved, right?
Right.
And so then, just as the year has gone on and I've connected with these kids and learned their stories. And, you know, so in the last cohort, we had a young guy. Well, I say young, he was in his late 30s, fully retired. And he had a day where we were challenging them on what do you want out of your life? Like, how much do you need to make? And what's your vision for your future like, right? And he texted me later that day and he goes, you really challenged me today. Like, I've been skating because I make plenty of money and I haven't really pursued my potential. 2 days later, he had a $24,000 commission day. That's what he made.
That's good for him. I mean, that's good.
You know, so you start hearing those stories and you can't help but to adopt that baby. It doesn't matter what it looks like and it becomes yours, you know. So I faced some of those same struggles. I think I have a little bit of a different perspective because I didn't create it though, right? So,
But you know, John, don't sell yourself short because you have made it your own. And frankly, one of the reasons why I've been obviously more hands-off with you at this up to this point anyway, based on the fact that there's no way I could describe where it should go. To you had to take what was there and make it fit where you were going to be successful.
Yeah.
Each one of us would have executed differently on the pieces of the puzzle that we got. How do we put them together, back together, or maybe we just throw the puzzle away, we start over, however you did it. So yeah,
that was actually really difficult, you know, because so first Raleigh had everything fragmented, which when I look back at it, I think he, like many veterans, had some security concerns that, you know, made it to where he was storing information on multiple platforms, right?
Yes.
You know, and so when we recreated this, you know, you and I spent a lot of time on the phone, and like, I'm good at tech, but I'm not tech heavy like he is. I struggle with CRMs, and, you know, I still do stuff on notebooks and paper, and, you know, I mean, and whereas he really was dug into that. So, you know, as I looked at what's the end state, you know, getting these kids hired for more than $20-25 an hour. It doesn't matter how good you are at a CRM, that's not going to get you hired.
Right.
That's Slack exactly. Is not going to get you hired or any of these other really, really awesome tools, right? You know, when we look at what he started, and you said this to me, well, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, you said, at the end of the day, we're still doing what he wanted. It might not look the same because I'm not him, right? I'm definitely older and fatter.
Raleigh was pretty young. He was only 49 years old.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just a little bit older than him, not by much. Okay. Three years. You know, but really saving the passion of why he started this and what he was really after has been important to both of us, I think. And you know, I think it's a good place to kind of transition.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
Here we are. I met him in May with you and him, May of 22.
Right.
He comes down the first week of June, spends a week with me at Fort Campbell. We put together a plan. He invites me. I come and I teach twice. Then he's graduating. Then in September, he and I were starting to talk about dividing up the labor. So it was going to be me, him, and Christina doing trainings. And then in July, he ends up taking his life. And for me, like I was sharing with you before we came on the call, that was a really hard gut punch for me. I didn't know him well, but he ended up taking his life on Friday. And on Sunday, one of my very good friends, I married her and her husband, and her husband's still a great friend of mine. She ended up committing suicide, shooting herself. So I had those back to back. I found out about her first, and then Christine messaged me, "Did you hear what happened?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" You know, there's so many of our veteran community that struggles with this, that I don't know what the numbers are today, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-22 a day end up.
Yeah, it's a big number. There's no, and I didn't know it until I got involved in this. And I should know that number too, but it is far greater than the average. And there's an uptick in suicide in the U.S. and maybe around the world, but certainly in the U.S. anyway. But veterans historically have had this issue, and I would speculate combat veterans probably is even higher. I don't think there'd be any. Yeah, you know, what happened between the time, I think your question or your thought was what really transpired between those 6 weeks in there or 7 weeks, whatever it was?
I don't even know that we know, because like you and I have talked about that you didn't even really know. Like, everybody was kind of really taken aback by it. We knew that there were some struggles and the pressure, like you were sharing, was on about the finances and stuff like that. And I don't even know that we need to know why. It's just that here's a guy that was successful, created his own company, was doing really great things in the world and already accomplished so much in his life. But here you were in his life as one of his, you know, mentors slash partners, and you didn't know. I wasn't close enough to him to know. And, you know, there's probably other people out there that stay silent like he did.
Yeah, you know, and I could say I didn't know, but I have to say this. I did have a level of concern about it. I mean, I actually did entertain the thought of buying some insurance on him, because if the company's running and this did happen, the money wasn't for me. It would have been to keep the company running. Now, we were able to do that, but you and I both know it did this before you got it back to this. So, and I don't know if that would have happened. And one of his employees, Lonnie, I got the call. I called Lonnie right up, and Lonnie's first question to me was, did Raleigh commit suicide? This is when he said, why is my phone blowing up, Jim? Why are you so desperately trying to get a hold of me? Did Raleigh commit suicide? And when one's mind becomes tortured, there's an acceleration in some expressions that you do become aware of. I'll put it that way. Yeah. Now, could I have ever interpreted that there's something imminent? I'm not trained, and that's a bad excuse. I should have said, "Holy shit, there's something here." But he had some closer people than me that lived right there that saw him every day. Now his fiance, she actually told me, she said, "You know, Jim, we actually had broke it off. You know, he had bought a very expensive ring and he was on the hook for that. I didn't know that until after the fact." So in other words, she shared these additional financial burdens that he put on himself. And we talked about flamboyancy. It was extravagant. We'll put it that way. And so more than he could afford at the time. So, you know, she was crushed, by the way, because she always saw, even to this day, she still says to me, we were going to get married. I knew I was going to marry Raleigh Wilkins. There was no doubt in her mind. She said, okay, so we broke it off. So what? But that was not going to be the end of the story for her or for them. She was convinced. And she said to me, she said, she knew. She said he called her one day and they sat somewhere and talked for 4 hours. And then he went home and he did this thing. So she knew at some point that something was, she didn't realize it was that imminent, but she knew too. And both of us kick ourselves and that we were close enough and didn't do something about it. And, so that's, you know, what can I say? I mean,
there's a couple of things there. You know, first is that people shouldn't suffer in silence and leave clues. Like, get help. Like, you know, for the people that are going to listen to this and they're going to want to hear Raleigh's story and how all this kind of transpired, because I believe that that's going to happen. I believe people are going to want to know this story. I would say don't be Raleigh. Speak up and actually trust your friends to tell them what's happening. Doesn't matter if it's financial or emotional or combat related or whatever it is. Don't be the next Raleigh, right? Yeah. Like, you know, and then for you and her, yeah, there might have been some clues, but you can't hang on to that, right? Like, unless he like flat out told you and then you didn't act. Because, you know,
and that would have been, And that's a good point, John, but I also think that the rest of us also need to be able to be a little more sensitized, especially those people who are at risk, which is veterans, which is combat veterans, which are people who come from backgrounds like his. I mean, he shared his background very openly with him. So, those kinds of things added up in my mind, but like you just said, I couldn't have predicted the moment, and I'm not sure I could have done anything about it anyway. Right. But that's not, I don't want to be a cop out around that either. So they're all of us. I mean, it's a conversation.
But the lesson here is it's twofold. If you're listening to this and you're in that place, speak out. And then for those that are listening that aren't in that place, be in tune to what your friends and family are saying, so that if something strikes you as off, that you actually say something. Hey, are you okay? Like, where are we at here?
Where's your brain? Where's your...
You know, this podcast, this is the first one that we're doing. And I wanted to do it this way to memorialize what has happened and to tell people the story of how I came to be here, but to honor the legacy of what he built. Because I wouldn't be here if he hadn't built this. Because when Fort Campbell called me, bro, I was like, I am not interested in building that. Like, I knew that that was going to be a red tape struggle, which I know he dealt with because he told me about it. And it took him forever to get it up and going. And so that struggle at where I was at in my life, I did not want to tackle. And, you know, I really, and I've shared this with you privately, is, you know, I look at what he's done and what he accomplished, and it set the stage for us to be where we're at today. It's unfortunate that he's not here to see it, but there's so many things that can come out of this now. And hopefully, and I tell every class this now, you know, I tell them that, you know, he committed suicide, and every one of you have my cell phone. And if you don't call me when things are bad and you don't tell me, I will find you in heaven or hell, wherever you end up, and kill you again. Like nobody should go through this by themselves. Yeah. And I would be really upset if any of them didn't call me. Hopefully I'm building a relationship that they do call. So if you're listening, you know, don't hide that. Call your friends, call your family, let them know, because it's not worth it in the end. So
there's nothing you can't overcome. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of resources. There's a lot of sensitive resources out there to get.
Let's switch up here and kind of wrap this up. I told you we were going to do 15 or 20 minutes, but it's been really great. And we're now at an hour.
You can edit it down.
No, I'm not going to edit it down. It's been great. So he ends up committing suicide. I call you shortly after. I give you a couple of weeks and I'm like, hey, what can I do to help you? Talk to me about, from your angle, carrying this, trying to figure out how to keep it alive. What was going through your mind at the time, and how did we get to where we're at today, where you and his sister gave me the company?
We had some employees and they had to go find positions right away. So they were unable to try to sort this out. They had families, so they needed to do their thing. And one of them was right in the middle of a cross-country move, I think. So his sister was really his only living relative. He'd lost both of his parents quite young, so that's all he had was just. So she got a hold of me right away and said, Jim, you know, can you give me some help here? And sure, absolutely. And she's a real fine human being, just a delightful person. I'm honored and I'm so thrilled that I got to get to know her and Raleigh's fiance too. But
yep.
Elizabeth brought a lot of strength to, look, Jim, I'll take care of the personal side of this. And this is not easy. I'm flying to Chicago and I'm going to, you know, take care of all this stuff that's been left. But the company side, the sales platoon side, what can you do to help transition it, keep it alive? I really want to keep Raleigh's legacy alive, so which translated in keeping sales platoon alive, at least in my head, and hers too, at the end of the day. And I did have some offerings. I think, John, I've been open. I had people who came to me and said, hey, they were willing to put some actual money on the table to have the franchise of Sales Platoon. But then I met with these people. In fact, two of them were in Chicago, and because they knew him when I met with them. Nice guys. I mean, very nice people. One of them was a vet. One of them was not. One of them ran a very successful sales training organization. And then the other one ran a corporate financial. He was a wealth management, basically what he was, for corporations and individuals. And so why would he be interested? And he was the vet. And he really wanted, when I got in and really peeled back the onion on why do you want to do this and really, what's this all about for you? And it was more about, it came clear to me that he was more interested in meeting with the big companies that Raleigh created a relationship with so he could expand his business and he might find a way to pursue the training side. But it was too self-serving for me. It wasn't a Raleigh spirit. And yeah. So the other person was interested in creating a way that he would be able to benefit because he charged for his training. And then he also did the recruiting side too, which is great. And he could have probably taken this and put it into his company, but it would have been such a small piece. I felt like it wouldn't get the attention, and him not being a vet, I don't feel like it was going to have, again, the same attention that you give it or that someone else would get. So, and then there was a corporate partner that stepped up, and I couldn't quite understand why this corporation really wanted it. I actually couldn't pin that down, but it didn't feel right to me. So, and I do a lot of things. I either go in and do a lot of discovery, a lot of tough questions, put those pieces together, a little research, or I act on my gut. And that last piece, that corporate piece, I mean, it felt good to me. I was like, well, you know what? Elizabeth could take some cash out of this. And, right. And at the same time, this was a veteran that worked for this big corporation, but the big corporation at the end of the day, in my mind, really didn't, they could have dumped it in 20 minutes later, would have never missed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel it was a real secure place to go. And then you called me and said, what are you doing? What's going to happen here? And I'm quite thankful you did because, and I think maybe you even called me before I did some of this due diligence on the other three players, or at least two out of the three, and came back and talked to Elizabeth. So Elizabeth, there's nothing here. I mean, there's nothing that you're going to really gain. I mean, let's put it this way, Elizabeth, I can sell this and convert this to some cash for you, but not going to be that much, number one. And she doesn't live in an extraordinary or affluent fashion, but money is not her thing. It's not at all. I mean, she's just like Raleigh, it was all from her heart. I mean, she raises her children, her daughter. And so wasn't really, who was really more interested in Raleigh's vision going forward, which was really cool for me because I was like, wow, how great is this? Because how much easier is it, John, for me to go find someone that shares the same passion? It's easy to find someone to throw you a few dollars, but it's no fun in that. You know, I mean, I'm an investor and I invest in ideas that'll translate into money.
Right.
But that's an arm's length, cold hearted, whatever it is. But when you're talking about training people and training veterans and human beings and getting involved with that, I wasn't up for just taking it out in a cash value exchange. It just becomes a transaction and I wouldn't feel good about it. So you showed up and you were very humble and said, Jim, I don't know what I could do, but I'd really like to figure out if I could help. I said, well, why don't you take it and run with it? And I know at the time, Elizabeth already told me, find the place and I don't need anything out of it. And I was, I'm in this, that was my mission. I've always told you that my piece of the puzzle is hey, if I got any of it back, that's great. So I do have motivation around that. There's no doubt. Sure. And in fact, if I could deliver something back to her, that's gravy though. That's totally after you and I have, after you and this mission has fulfilled its core elements of what we know we're getting these veterans in and we're finding them jobs and they're being successful at it. That's that. And I know you're there. You've already proven it. You've done it in less than a year. You transitioned this thing from something that could have been just a smoke. It could have just disappeared without any sense at all. And you actually took that smoke, if you will, and you brought it back together and you picked it up and ran with it. And you picked up the most rewarding pieces, which is the training and finding jobs for these people and giving them a sense of self about I can do this job. Those are the key elements that you brought to the party and you delivered and you continue to deliver. That's really how this has come together. And so I thank you. Elizabeth thanks you for sure. Raleigh is not here, but he thanks you. And I can't tell you how I appreciate it. I really do. And I think there's a long way to go to make it where we are. And the only thing standing in our way is you, because you want to keep teaching.
Wow. What a way to take that go. Wow.
That's right.
You know, I just remember, I remember our first meeting and you were so quiet. And I remember, I was like, what is this guy's role? You know? And then, we talked again. I think it was while he was at Fort Campbell, he called you and the three of us were talking. And then, you know, I had no clue what was going to happen. When I made that first call to you, it was genuinely like, hey, bro, what do you need? Like,
yeah.
You know, and then the second call was on, from my perspective, the second call was really about, what are you going to do? I know we're not going to do September because that's, there's no way, but right. What are we going to do? And that's when you said, I'm thinking about selling. And I just took a gamble. I had no clue. I was like, well, shit, I'll throw my name in the hat. Like, just see what happens. And here we are now, a year later.
Yeah.
A year and a half later. And man, it has been so fulfilling for me to meet these kids, to train these kids in what you and I both love, sales.
Yeah.
And that they're not getting, because I called Raleigh from one comment from Fort Campbell. This is what started this whole thing. Guys are getting out of the Army and they're getting paid $20-$25 an hour. And I was like, get the hell out of here. There's no way.
He's right.
Like 20 years of war and this is what we're getting offered. There's no way. And I was like, every one of them can go do sales and even not be a great salesman like you and make $50,000, $55,000. Like there's like, and I, you know, and that's what led to that call to Raleigh was literally they said that one thing and it changed the course of my life. And then you being the person you are, and you've given me so much help over the last year and a half to figure out how to rescue this and how to put it back on track. And I mean, we're not, you know, you have that experience. I don't, running bigger companies. A bigger company is already a well-oiled machine. And if the CEO passes, yeah, you know, we'll just go hire a new CEO. Well,
having that succession plan in place is something a bigger company's going to afford to do. They're going to have people in the line. And, you know, I want to make one little call out, and that is during the transition for both of us was Christine Miller. And Christine, having taken that last cohort and saw them through their employment, so that you and I could kind of concentrate, what do we do with the next class? When does it start? And you concentrated more on it than I did. But the fact that you got that organized, I do appreciate that she hung in there without pay. I mean, she
She made huge sacrifices.
Yeah.
Huge sacrifices.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to have her on too. We're going to do a podcast with her.
So. Yeah. She's great. I mean, she's very good.
Good, man. Well, I appreciate your time and coming on and sharing his story. And we're going to put his obituary in the show notes and a link to where this is going to be. And then it's going to be hosted on the website as well. Man, it's just so good for everybody to hear the story from both our perspectives and how this went and to get to know him a little bit better. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, well, you're quite welcome, John. I wish you and your family a Merry Christmas and, you know, anytime. And this actually spurred some, this is great stuff because it spurred some things that I want to share back with you. I'll put my thoughts down and get them together. Sure. And, you know, you always learn and your brain fires up when you get in these conversations. So again, thank you again. Now I'll say goodbye.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Bye.
Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Sales Platoon. For more updates and veteran success stories, join us next time as we continue to decode the art of selling through the unique perspectives of those who've served.